This is All Things Considered on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Peter Biello. This far into the campaign season, polling data is likely to generate headlines. And if you live in New Hampshire, those polling firms may have found that data by calling you and hundreds of other Granite Staters. But how do those polling firms find you? How do they choose their questions? And what do they do with your information? For more on this, we turn to David Brooks. He's a reporter with the Concord Monitor and writer at GraniteGeek.org. And he is moderating a Science Cafe panel discussion about this very subject tomorrow night at Killarney's Pub in Nashua. David, thank you very much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
So we're going to leave out any discussion of any recent polls about the current candidates running for president.
I'm sorry, there's candidates running for president? I wasn't aware of that.
Can you believe it?
I didn't know that.
We're going to ignore them and focus on the science of polling. So my first question, David, is how did they get my phone number?
Well, they got your phone number by random digit dialing, which is, in other words, basically they dial every possible combination of phone numbers, sort of. And actually, as part of preparing for the Science Cafe tomorrow night, I learned that random digit dialing is more interesting than I thought. So under the basic various federal laws in particular, random digit dialing cannot be done by robocalls, by these automated callers. And that's why you don't, or at least you shouldn't, get any robocalls to your cell phone, because there's no directory for cell phone. So robocalls can only use directory numbers like the White Pages, which means it only comes to landlines for those of us who still have landlines. On the other hand, if your poll is done by human beings sitting in a telephone bank, then you can use random digit dialing. So they are the ones that come to your cell phone.
But I imagine that kind with the real human being is way more expensive than the robocalling.
A lot more expensive. I can't say exactly. I talked to Zachary Azem, a UNH Survey Center, who's going to be one of the panelists, and he declined to give me the actual number because, I mean, that's one of the things they do is they sell these polls to companies. But my looking around, it seems like to get a poll that has 500 responses, which is what you usually need, is going to cost $10,000 to $20,000, whereas a robocall is maybe a quarter of that, a tenth of that even.
How do these polling firms go about crafting the questions? Is there a way to describe the perfect poll question that they come up with?
Well, so the way it was described to me is the first thing you really need to do is figure out your target audience, who you want to get information from. So, for example, you know, for these political polls, you got to be a registered New Hampshire voter who's likely to vote. So that's the single most important thing in a poll has to do. A poll that is talking about buying, cigars, and it interviews 10,000 people, 9,000 of whom don't smoke, it's a useless poll. The actual wording of the questions is at least as much art as science. There is considerable literature about just changing the order of the word, the order in which you ask questions, the order of the words within a question. Almost the tone of voice can significantly alter the response you get. The example I think is most interesting at the moment with political polls is the standard question you get, of course, is, you know, if the election was held tomorrow, who would you vote for? Which seems like a very intelligent way to ask. But there is a mounting body of evidence that you can get a better reflection of what the voting population actually thinks if instead you ask people, if the election was held tomorrow, who do you think would win? Because the second question, you're not asking for my personal opinion about elections. You're asking for what I think the society around me is doing. And if you get lots of people saying what they think society around them is doing, it seems to be a more accurate depiction of what society around them actually is doing.
And once these polling firms have gathered their data, made these thousands of phone calls, what do they do with that data?
They crunch it numerically. There are some very well-established mathematical algorithms, which I do not know, that tell you how confident you can be. So the general thing is a 95% confidence interval and, say, a margin of error of 4%. So you'll say, you know, Jones is, you know, 30% of the voters like Jones and 20% of the voters like Smith with a margin of error of 4%. And since the difference between them is wide enough, you're very confident that Jones would win 95% of the time. So if 20 identical elections were held in 20 parallel universes, Jones would win 19 of them. That's what that poll says. On the other hand, if Jones gets 20% and Smith gets 25% and there's a margin of error of 4%, that seems like it still says that one guy is winning, but actually it isn't because the margins of error overlap. So there's some mathematical intricacies in there that are fun to play with.
So, David, on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being totally awesome, 1 being just terrible, how would you rate this conversation we're having?
Totally awesome, as always.
Well, David, thank you very much for your kind words, and thanks for coming in and chatting with me.
Oh, thank you.
That's David Brooks, a reporter with the Concord Monitor and the writer who always rates a 5 out of 5 on the geekiness scale, 5, of course, being most geeky, at graniteGeek.org. And he is moderating a Science Cafe panel discussion about polling tomorrow night at 6 at Killarney's Pub in Nashua.